Chapter 8. Something is crushing me. Jamie. He's thrown himself on me, pressing me into the ground. A moment later, he pushes himself off, and the absence of his weight instantly expands my lungs, and I gulp deep breaths. My vision comes into focus just as I realize it's gone dark. Jamie's hand is on my back, forcing me to stay down. What the hell? I push myself up anyway, shaking him off. Firecrackers. Tossed onto the road by local boys stirring up mischief. A few years ago, it might have been Levi and his friends. The boys laugh as they skateboard away. Most people are turned in their direction. An older man shouts at their backs. A few people gawk at Jamie and me. I get up and bend over to dust off my legs, observing my bloody knee an instant before it begins stinging. Shit, I say as the pain grows and blood trickles down my leg to my running shoe. Donis, I'm so sorry. I panicked. Jamie kneels to inspect my injury. He quickly removes his t-shirt, and even in my confusion, I am struck by how lean he is. Sleek. His tan chest is a human anatomy lesson. Each muscle is clearly defined. His hand on the back of my knee feels so hot that I wonder if it will leave a mark. With his other hand, he pours water on it from a bottle that someone hands him and dabs at the wound with his shirt. I focus on his bent head. His curls look soft. A few strands shine copper under the sunlight. You thought it was gunshots? His hands freeze for just a second before he resumes cleaning my knee, as if I hadn't said anything. I continue. You lived in some dangerous neighborhoods. He doesn't quite meet my eyes. I fight an urge to trace the length of his scar. I read about scars once. Hypertrophic scars are reddest in the first year. They fade with time. Jamie's scar is fresh. That cut's too straight to be accidental. If what Auntie said was right, then someone cut him on purpose. Recently. Danger can turn up anywhere, he says. As soon as Jamie and I reach the powwow grounds, the twins shout my name. They're dressed in jingle dress regalia. Skirts with waved rows of small, silver-colored cones clink melodically as Perry and Pauline run toward me, Auntie close behind. Their eyes go to my knee. Holy! What happened to you? Something bloody? Perry asks hopefully. Someone set off a bunch of firecrackers, caught us off guard, and we dove for cover, but Jamie patched me up. I make it sound like an exciting adventure. Jamie shoots me a grateful smile. When Auntie approaches, I hear her before I see her. Sewn onto her yellow jingle dress are bands of orange and white ribbons, and attached to those are 365 jangling golden cones. She bends over to inspect my injury. Looks like you cleaned it pretty well, she tells Jamie. There's antiseptic spray in the first aid kit in the RV, she reminds me. Get some on your knee right away. Lily approaches in her fancy shawl regalia, which includes a simple black floral fabric dress with black ribbon around the skirt hem. She holds a black shawl fringed in long black and silver strands. She eyes Jamie's shirt, which still has traces of my blood, and wrinkles her nose at my threadbare yellow Girls on the Run t-shirt, cutoff jeans, and old running shoes. Holy wah! Yous look like you fought a pack of res dogs and lost. But we put up a good fight, Jamie says. I snort, and Lily raises an eyebrow at me, eyes glinting. Just as I'm bracing myself for one of Lily's pervy comments, we hear the MC make the final call for dancers to line up for grand entry. Lily heads off while Jamie and I jog over to Teddy and Art's RV at the edge of the powwow grounds. I douse my knee in antiseptic spray, swearing at the fresh sting. I rummage for a shirt and hand it to Jamie. Hurry up, we're going to be late, I say. It's one of mine from the last time I went camping with them and is too big on him, but at least it's clean. Jamie turns away when changing, but I can't resist taking a peek at his back muscles. For science. We make our way to the covered bleachers forming a perimeter around the dance arena. At the very center is a large, cedar-covered arbor with more than a dozen drum groups warming up for grand entry. Each drum is the size of a round coffee table. Men are seated around it, each one beating it with a drumstick that has a leather-wrapped bulb on the end, while the women stand behind them. We all rise for grand entry. Carrying a staff of eagle feathers, the head veteran leads the procession. Each veteran in the color guard brings in a different flag. U.S., Canada, Michigan, tribe, and several clans. The head dancers come next, a man and woman in regalia, dancing side by side. They're followed by the two teens who are the junior head dancers. Then a seemingly endless line of dancers enters the arena by category, announced by the MC. Jamie is on the edge of his seat, taking everything in. He has questions about everything. When a woman near us makes a high-pitched trilling sound, a few other women join in. "What's that?" he asks, wide-eyed. "Those are called lilies. Nish women trill them, mostly to honor someone. Other times, there's more to it. Something else, but I'm not sure what. I make a mental note to ask Auntie." I point out Granny June at the front of the women's traditional dancers. "That's Lily's great-grandma. She named her dog Tribal Council just so she could yell at him." I imitate Granny. "Fetch my slippers, Council. No Council. Bad Tribal Council." Jamie throws his head back and laughs. I scold myself. "Don't be that girl." I think of Levi's mom, Dana, the one who got to take the firekeeper name. Sometimes that girl wins. Auntie and her girls pass our section with the rest of the jingle dress dancers. My aunt is like a golden flame flickering around the arena. When the twins raise their tiny feather fans at the honor beats, I feel so proud that the breath catches in my throat. The fancy shawl dancers are the last to enter the arena. Lily's shawl drapes over outstretched arms. The fringe blurs as she spins, a lone black butterfly surrounded by color. I lean into Jamie, speaking into his ear as he scans the panoramic kaleidoscope. "All these dancers? Imagine that each one is an atom, forming molecules of dancers for each category. Traditional, fancy, grass, jingle. You see the whole entity." I point with my lips at the sea of dancers. They entered the arena single file, but their line has spiraled around the drum arbor. Not a speck of grass is visible in the space. Now focus on just one dancer, say, a jingle dress dancer. Jamie dutifully fixes his gaze. Every atom has subatomic parts. Her regalia includes a dress, belt, moccasins, and a lot of other items. Dancers don't start out with their full regalia. They get it bit by bit. Each piece is a connection to her family, her teachers, and even to ancestors generations back. If you know the story of her regalia, who and where and why each item came to be, then you know her. We all remain standing as the singing is led by drumbeats so powerful they reverberate through the bleachers to my feet, as if pulsing my own heart. I can feel Jamie's gaze. I breathe deeply, inhaling the songs, then meet his eyes. "You know the saying, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts?" Jamie nods. "Grand entry is the whole," I continue. "It's the synergy of all the teachings." My macro theory of niche connectivity may not make sense to anyone except me, but seeing Jamie's excitement, I want to share it with him. After a long moment, Jamie says, "I like how you see the world, Donis." We watch in silence until the flags are posted and the veterans' honor song has finished. As we take our seats, Jamie turns to me suddenly. "Hey, why aren't you dancing? You didn't skip it to show me around, did you?" I look down at my hands. "I'm taking a break for a year as part of grieving my uncle. Even though I'm angry at Uncle David, I thought it would help me get past what he did." "I'm sorry." Jamie seems embarrassed. "I didn't mean to pry." "You can ask me anything, Jamie. We're friends." His smile reaches his eyes. "You have no idea how much that means to me." I will not be that girl. No matter how much Jamie's eyes sparkle with delight that ripples warmly to every cell in my body. After, we roam the vendor booths that form an outer ring surrounding the bleachers. I keep an eye out for Lily. We run into her and Granny June near the first aid booth. "Hey, we want to sit with yous when it's time for the twins to dance," Lily says. I tell Jamie it's the first time the girls are dancing in a competition category. Last year they were still in tiny tots. They're so good. Better dancers at six than I'll ever be. "I bet you can dance," Jamie says, grinning. "Levi's always talking about what a star athlete you are." "I have the endurance, just not light on my feet. Or disgraceful. Granny June nods. Your brother is the dancer in your family. Yeah, but Levi never wanted to dance fancy or grass. Just hip-hop, I say. Lily nudges Jamie. You'll get to see Levi in action at Shagala. All you soups have to go. You should take Donis. I'm sure Jamie's girlfriend, Jennifer, will visit for that. I glare daggers at Lily. Shagala? Jamie says slowly, like it's a foreign language. Is that Nish? No, I say. Sha for Sioux Hockey Association, and Gala because it's a fancy dance. Shagala snagala, Lily says. We all crack up except for Jamie, who may not know that snagging is what we call a... I'll let Levi explain that one. You a hockey player? Granny June narrows an eye as she scans Jamie head to toe. Yes, ma'am. He straightens himself up a bit taller. Hockey players are all hype, hey, she grumbles. Best lover I ever had was an accountant. Granny June lowers her voice in a conspiratorial whisper. Saganash. Granny June, he's not a boyfriend. He's a boy who's a friend, I clarify. And I thought you were a smart college girl, Granny June says. She takes a second look at Jamie before pointing her lips in my direction. You gonna do right by her? Jamie stares at Granny before answering. Yes, I will. Good, because things end how they start, she says before wandering off to haggle with vendors for senior discounts. Granny June's got opinions. I roll my eyes and hope I'm not blushing. I like her, Jamie declares. You like her now, Lily begins. Just wait till you realize everything she says is either raunchy or a quote from a fortune cookie. Don't forget her rants against tribal council, I add. Jamie grins. Her dog or the actual tribal council? Both, Lily and I say in unison, followed by jinx. Before she can say double jinx, I shout jinx infinity. I give her a bratty smirk. Infinity wins. Lily tells Jamie, never argue with a geek. They use science and math like weapons. His laughter reverberates through my body, and for just one second, I let myself imagine what it'd be like if there wasn't a Jennifer. But isn't this how Dana started? As a shiver runs the length of my spine, Travis suddenly appears at Lily's side. Without a thought, I put myself between them. A buffer for Lily, a pause for Travis. Hold up, Donnie, I just want to talk. Travis attempts to peer behind me. Lily, can we talk? He has the audacity to glare at me. Without your goon? That's a bad idea, I announce while raising my fists. If he wants to call me a goon, I'll act like one. Travis shifts from foot to foot as he attempts to soften his stance. He flashes a familiar smile that reveals the beginnings of tooth decay at the gum line. Oh, Travis. A pang of sadness seeps through a crack in my goon armor. Then he transforms his face into his, please, Lily, just one more chance expression. His hands shake as he grips a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew. A coffee filter floats inside like in a snow globe. I see Jamie notice it too, and we lock eyes. Not here, not now. Lily looks nervously in the direction Granny went. Oh, come on, Lilybit. I've heard Travis call her that nickname a million times, but this time, there's an edge to it. The hairs stand up on the back of my neck. Just go, Travis, I say, tensing. Hey, man, let me help you. Jamie offers a hand to shake. Who are you? Travis snarls, the pleading look on his face evaporating immediately. Stop, Travis. Jamie is Donis's friend. He's a new soup. Lily tugs Travis's arm. Just go, okay? Travis snorts, his expression twisting. Donnie finally got herself a puck fuck? The ugliness of his mean-spirited glee reveals a Travis I don't recognize at all. Where is the boy who convinced me to place my textbook beneath my pillow the night before a test in case its contents might permeate our brains through osmosis? Shut up, Travis, Lily shoves him. Please, just go. I'll go if you promise you'll come find me later, Lily. I just want to talk. Fine, But only if you go now. Okay, you promised. Travis flashes a grin, all smiles again before darting away. Holy shit, Lily, I say. Don't talk to him, he looks really rough. And you know what that coffee filter stuffed into his pop was laced with. He can't even get through a day without it. He's in deep. I know, she sighs. But what am I supposed to do? It's Travis. I'll talk to you later. I need to find him now. Granny can't see him or she'll raise hell. Lily, don't. I reach for her arm, but she moves away. No, I can take care of myself. Lily rushes off. Come on, Lily. I call to her before realizing I sound exactly like Travis trying to cajole her into doing what he wanted. Lily can take care of herself, and Travis won't try anything with so many people around. So that's Travis, Jamie says as we watch the small black figure disappear. Yep. I'm still disturbed by the change in Travis and my trying to get Lily to do what I wanted, and my embarrassment that Jamie saw what just happened. I clear my throat. Travis used to be sweet and so funny. In school, when it was time for announcements, he'd do this drum roll thing on his belly. I shake my head. He looks so bad. Has he always been like this? Jamie asks. I'm relieved he doesn't seem rattled by Travis's behavior. Well, he's another lost boy, I shrug, but it's a hollow gesture that causes a familiar jolt of pain in my left shoulder. I don't know why I tried making light of it. Jamie's demonstrated unexpected compassion again and again. People call them lost boys, like from Neverland, never taking anything seriously and seeming stuck in place, but I think there's more to it. What do you think is going on? Jamie asks. His voice is low and calm. My aunt once described a rough patch in her life as self-medicating the pain. Maybe that's what's really going on when guys like Travis quit school and fixate on video games and weed. Well, more than that now. And drinking garbage. Literal garbage. Jamie's expression reminds me of Uncle David during class, waiting for the final answer. And I've known the answer for several months. Travis is a meth head, I admit. Lily made me promise not to tell anyone, but Jamie doesn't know anyone in town. Besides, if Travis is showing up at powwows drinking meth tea, then everybody will know soon. The Moccasin Telegraph is powerful. I reach for my phone to check on Lily. Me. Sorry for grabbing you. Are you okay?